You're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Yes, it's true. Aloha and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. This is your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll shine a loving spotlight on Hawaii's native plants and seek the assistance of superstar nutrient cyclers. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is brought to you by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kahula. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
And thank you so much to our wonderful underwriters for not only keeping this station alive, but providing us essential products, services, and quality of life here on Kauai. Thank you so much for all your efforts everywhere you are, and to the listeners for dialing in. And I'm very excited that today I am joined in studio by a couple of dear friends. Mac is here as often and always. And we also have Eric Hansen, director of the Go Farm Hawaii program right here on Kauai, and a good friend and a lover of the native plants. And Eric, why don't you say hello to the good people?
Aloha kakou, aloha Paul. Kauai, so glad to be on the air this afternoon to just talk about the beauty of our native plants and just have everyone just aloha aina, and let's just get into things today.
Oh yeah. And some people, listeners here, know Eric as programmer of the Soul Shakedown Party every other Saturday night, coming up next on January the 9th from 8 to 10. Yet, he is not just fun and games. He is also a wealth of knowledge and passion. And so we're going to get into it pretty deeply here today. Excited about that.
Mahalo for having me, Paul. Mahalo.
It's an honor. We're going to start with our celestial session, a look to the heavenly skies above, a focus on our Hawaiian moon knowledge carried through to the very present day, and a look to the future by the Hawaiian culture, and a reflection of the deep knowledge and awareness through observations of countless generations here. And so today's Hawaiian Moon phase, brought to us by the 2015 Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council Hawaiian Lunar Calendar, as well as the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department. And today's Hawaiian Moon is La'au Kulua. La'au Kulua will rise over Kauai this evening at 11:14 p.m. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 5:31 a.m. tomorrow morning. And she'll set at 11:44 a.m. tomorrow. 71% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated.
Ooh.
And last quarter moon is coming up on New Year's Day, Friday, at 7:30 p.m. La'au Kulua is the second of three La'au moons. that shortly follows the full moon period. La'au means tree, plant, wood, timber, forest, as well as medicine. And that last meaning is tied into the recommendations for today. It's a very good day for going out into either your garden or the forest to mindfully collect plants for medicinal use. It is also a good day for planting some of our keystone Hawaiian plants, mai'a, bananas, ulu, breadfruit, as well as other trees.
Tree day.
As far as the biodynamic goes, it is transplanting time, and today is a good day for working with fruit. So today would be an excellent day for planting fruit trees. And if there were medicinal fruit trees on your list, that seems like it would be the best of all.
Sounds like ulu is kind of the way to go, as ulu has many medicinal aspects and many sustainable food aspects to it as well.
Indeed. And thanks to the National Tropical Botanical Garden, which we'll be focusing in on later in the show, or even now, we have many thousands of ulu trees now planted through the Hawaiian Islands.
Ulu-rific.
But there are still plenty of people who don't have them yet in their yard, so thank you, Diane, over at the Breadfruit Institute, and I'm knowing that she is continuing to make these plants available in various venues. So in the coming year, see if you can get yourself to a festival, an event where these beautiful ulu trees are being offered up to the community, and we will truly be food secure for the future.
Food secure, timber secure, fiber secure, medicine secure, secure sustainability. I think so.
Yes, yes. And our sustainability as farmers in the lowlands is truly tied to the health of our watershed.
Mm.
And a few months ago, Robin and I spoke about a new disease of the ohia, a keystone Hawaiian tree that is certainly very important on all of the Hawaiian Islands, but I would say no more greater in terms of percentage-wise than the island of Hawaii, which is Eric's birthplace and a place where he really formed his awareness and love of the native Hawaiian plants. And he's got an update on this very serious situation for us.
Yeah, so not to bring a downer to everyone, but we do have a serious issue occurring, thankfully, only right now on the Big Island. But this does have implication to affect all our Hawaiian islands. And so in our native forests, in the moku of Puna and in Hilo, as well as parts of Kona on the Big Island, we are seeing a spread of a disease that has been labeled rapid ohia death. This disease, what we wind up happening, what we wind up seeing is that areas within a native forest that are anywhere between an acre to 100 acres, we have a massive dieback of our ohia tree. And for those who don't know, ohia makes up about 80% of our native forest canopy, not just here on the big, or not just on the Big Island, but statewide in all our native forests. So what researchers have been finding is that there is a fungus that is affecting our trees, where suddenly, like literally rapidly, as the name goes, that within a 2-week period, a tree that's 2 years old, 2,000 years old, whatever the age, looks very healthy, all of a sudden we'll see all the leaves die off, where they will turn from a beautiful lush green foliage to completely brown. And it's in a matter of about 2 weeks where the tree just literally stops producing foliage and everything becomes unhealthy. And it's resulted, at least in certain areas of the Big Island, widespread death of trees. A lot of this has been documented in the lower residential areas of Puna. And for those who are not familiar with the region of Puna on the Big Island, it is a area that has massive subdivisions that are in the midst of young native ohia-dominated forests. So this is actually one of the few areas left in Hawaii where we still, despite having subdivision outgrowth and suburbanization, we have a massive amount of lowland intact native forest. So in these areas, what we're finding, or what researchers have found, is that we're having big just patches of forests just dying back. And it's what they researchers are finding is that this is related to a fungus. And so, okay, we're having trees die back. But we still have other things growing. You know, there's other trees, there's other things. What is the big deal here? There is certain implications that this could greatly affect our water resources amongst anything else. So whether you are a tree hugger, a conservationist, a cultural practitioner, a farmer, a person who just likes to sit indoors and watch video games and play video games and all that, whether you're a land developer, whether you're an ocean lover, whether you're a fisherman, we all, as people, no matter what our background is, have to be concerned about this, because this ultimately affects our water resources. So,
and I'm looking at the map right now in terms of the areas of occurrence where mm-hmm. this rapid ohia death has spread. The map delineates different areas in terms of the year when it was first noted.
Correct.
And there's a much wider occurrence in 2015. But interestingly, looking at this map of the Big Island, the new occurrences in 2015, which almost completely encircle the island, but it seems to all be at the same elevation all the way around.
What's also interesting is that the original sightings of this outbreak were in a subdivision known as Leilani, down in Puna, for anyone who's familiar with that area. And so that is more at a lower elevation, so we're talking something around 500 feet elevation. And what we're finding, or what researchers are finding, sorry, Kalamai, not me, but I did do some research, so anyway, is that the spread of this disease is making its way up the mountain.
Right.
And the more up the mountain you go on the Big Island, as you would find in most other places here in Hawaii, is that as you go upland, you're going into the more pristine native forests. And our native forest is where all our water is captured. There's a little noyau that I cannot remember in Hawaiian right now, but essentially it says that the rain follows the forest. And if we look at the idea that a healthy forest is where the rain's going to come, and without a healthy forest, we're not going to have rain coming. And
you did some very specific research on the capture
correct.
Of rain. In a native forest.
Right. So I actually did my master's research looking at the contribution of passing cloud vapor or fog and how that contributes to water being recharged into our forest, which then can be spread out through all the rest of our islands. And there was an area on Lanai back in the 1920s that was completely void of vegetation because of feral animals that had literally eaten away the forest. And so Lanai being blocked by the prevailing weather patterns that we have in Hawaii, the trade winds, by that of Maui Island, doesn't really get passing rain. So what they have is afternoon clouds being pushed up the mountain, but what wound up happening is there's no trees, and so literally these clouds that don't rain, the moisture in those clouds would just be a loss to the island. So after massive reforestation, they were able to literally plant a forest to capture the water. So if we look at our native forest, which is where all our water comes from, no matter what island we're at, is predominated or is mostly ohia trees, and we are seeing, at least on the Big Island, patches quite robust, quite large, that we're having large dominance of ohia trees pass, dying back on us, is that in theory, if we lose our trees, we lose our water capture. And this is something that we see in other places. You have destruction of, let's say, the Amazon rainforest. That place dries up, less rain comes. In this case, we're not purposely destroying the forest. There is a new fungal pathogen out there that no one has ever seen before that is literally spreading throughout at least the Big Island at the moment, that is taking out large contiguous areas. So this is something that we should all be concerned as politicians, as earth lovers, as non-earth lovers, because you know what? We all use a toilet. We all use water. And essentially, if we don't have a healthy forest, we don't have healthy water, we don't collect water.
So let's look at the solutions. What do we have available to us?
Well, what do we have available to us? So right now, the there's a group of researchers which consists of members from the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Forest Service Institute for Pacific Island Forestry, that are all collaborating together to try to figure out, oh my gosh, what do we do? And, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about scientific researchers, but they have to do a lot of research. So what do they know so far? They know that we have a disease. They know that it's been spreading. They know what it looks like. Do they know what to do? Well, that's kind of hard. No one's ever had to deal with this pathogen before.
In the Ohia forest.
In the Ohia forest.
But as we've learned, this is not an totally unknown disease.
Well, okay, so that's interesting you bring this up, Paul. So this disease, which for any who speak Latin, I apologize if I am calling my first of all, it's not a disease. It's a fungus wilt. So let's be proper about this. So it's a fungus. So funguses spread by spores. So it is it's known as whatever, I don't even want to say it. Anyway, you go look it up afterwards. But this disease is a different strain. This fungus is a different strain that of a pathogen that has existed in Hawaii since about the 40s. So there's a fungal pathogen that attacks our sweet potatoes and agriculture. And it's very related to the Ohia fungal problem that we're having, but it's not the same. It's a new strain.
But it's literally the same species.
It's the same species, literally, but it's a totally different strain. So it's like saying, oh, you know, I'm growing cucumbers, but I'm not growing Auntie's cucumbers.
Right.
Just to kind of put in people's perspectives that are gardeners.
But what this gets me thinking is, well, on the one hand, it could have actually been human activity and agriculture that caused this strain to be in, you know, contiguous or direct association with an Ohia forest. Yet, although agriculture may have caused the problem, perhaps what we've learned about how to manage it in a sweet potato patch over the past 70, 80 years could be applied in some new fashion to the forest.
Well, so a lot of the big commercial sweet potato farmers on the Big Island regrettably use conventional means of controlling various pathogens and other deleterious aspects to their agricultural production. So we're talking chemical sprays, systemics, fumigating soils. But there are people doing sweet potato production through alternative means by doing stuff like crop rotation, fallowing, cover cropping, looking at taking care of our soils and maybe building up our soil health, using other alternatives such as Korean natural farming, which looks at building up our microbial populations within our soils. So if those of you who are into probiotics for your own body, it's like putting probiotics in the soil, yeah. So pickle your soil. So interestingly, the researchers on the Big Island, the contingency of researchers, have been looking at different options. And one of the things that they have explored is using a type of conventional fungicide to control this fungus, which they have found, oh, wow, that works. But guess what? That fungicide is not labeled for that kind of use. So that doesn't work because legally that just, no can. Logistically, for these researchers to make this be labeled as for appropriate use takes lots of years, takes lots of time, lots of money, a whole bunch of paperwork that no one wants to go through. And right now, honestly, we're at the point where we just need to get this done, bingo, bango, popcorn, or else the potential of this disease is pretty strong. And you know, I'm not going to say this because I'm not a researcher, but I will say this has been documented literally on the research website for rapid ohia death, that this disease has a potential to kill ohia trees statewide here. So we need to act fast about this. So in the past, you know, a lot of institutional researchers typically shy away from the unconventional, if you will. But luckily on the Big Island, there is a really strong cohort of individuals that are practicing Korean natural farming. A lot of them are associated with the Big Island chapter of the Hawaii Farmers Union, which we have a Hawaii Farmers Union here. And so I believe it was in the last month or two that the contingency of researchers consisting of the University of Hawaii, the USDA, and the USDA's branch of Pacific Island Forestry gave a presentation, said, hey, this is what we know, natural farming community, Hawaii Farmers Union.
Where's anybody?
Help us, please. So one of the researchers, Lisa Keith, over there on the Big Island, is really into this idea of taking the concepts of Korean natural farming and, if you will, inoculating our forest with other beneficial microbes to combat maybe this new introduced strain of fungus. So, you know, it's kind of the idea is instead of, you know, getting the bad guy by bombing the whole forest with a nuclear bomb, right, we just bring in a whole bunch of good guys to kind of just, you know, pick out the bad guys out of the party kind of thing, so that, you know, everyone still lives and, you know, we can still have a party, because if we're going after the villain, we wipe out everyone else. That's not really that efficient. And that is one of the possible problems about dealing with using a conventional fungicide to literally look at taking out or controlling an acre to 100 acres at a time of forest. Now, could you imagine, I mean, if we're looking at a fungicide attacking a whole bunch of over 100 acres of trees with conventional means, that
it's not feasible.
It environmentally doesn't make any sense.
And as we know through the research,
it's not cost effective either.
Native Hawaiian forest, there are many endemic mushrooms or other kinds of fungi that would probably be non-selectively killed along with this pathogenic fungi.
So we're looking at ecosystem collapse, if you will. So and that no one wants that. The Forest Service is not in any way trying to be the bad guy here. They're just trying to, hey, what do we know? And there's, you know, one of the things that scientists tend to do is be like, where's the data? And there is no quantified, that's, you know, debatable data out there that a lot of researchers in the scientific community know about Korean natural farming. But there's been visual evidence that people have seen, that we know already, that we talk about here on this show and other shows. And the scientific community is saying, okay, let us take your guys' manao, your guys' knowledge, and let's see how we can apply this to a large-scale forest. So there is an example on the Big Island. It's maybe not the same kind of forest, but there is a farmer on the Big Island in Kohala, which is the northern end of the Big Island, that has 700 acres of macadamia nut. So that's a 700-acre forest of macadamia nuts. So this gentleman has been running 300 acres for the last 4 years using inoculation methods of that of Korean natural farming to control his pest populations, other deleterious aspects that can happen in farming. He's got that kind of under control. So the Forest Service, in conjunction with the other researchers that are trying to figure out how to combat our problem of the Ohia rapid death, are being like, okay, we see this happening in our orchards, in our forest, in our fruit forest, if you will. Can we do this on a bigger scale in our watersheds, in our native forest? And it's really promising and hopeful to me that researchers are looking beyond conventional chemical methods and looking into something of a more holistic, actually probably more feasible thing, because when we look at Korean natural farming, it's all about inoculating. So you get the spores, you put it in one area, and it just spreads. So it's like, you know, a cake, and you just spread the aloha all over the place. You know, you just take that the frosting and just let it go. We will see what will happen of this in the future. There are a couple cautionary things that as individual people we can do. Certain things include don't take ohia from an area of infestation and spread it to an area of non-infestation. So essentially, you know, don't ship stuff from Big Island to other islands would be one thing. If you do find yourself with a infected tree, which sadly my parents have found one on their property, one of the best things you can do is to cut that thing down and have a big emu, because the fire will stop the fungal spreading. So, you know, some people are, I use ohia for smoked meat or for emu and like that. And you can still, you know, grab from healthy trees. But, you know, if you have one in your own yard or in your own neighborhood, that's a great time to have a luau. So, not that, you know, we should be celebrating our ohia forest dieback, but it's also an opportunity to eat well. And so just be mindful of what you see out there. If you do cut a tree, you will smell the essence of like a rotting fruit, and that's one indicator to know that that the fungus has attacked the ohia tree. Another one is you'll literally see your tree within 2 weeks, all the leaves turn brown. They don't fall off, which is really interesting. They will hold on to the tree for months. Right. But and then another thing is when you cut the wood, if anyone is familiar with the ohia, it has this really nice dark red inside to it. But you'll see along the edges that it will get this dark black staining, almost like a black tie-dye, that will also be an indication of that the fungus has attacked the ohia tree.
Okay. I want to let people know you're listening to In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. And Eric Hansen from the Go Farm Hawaii program is joining us. Lots of knowledge about the native forests, love of the native forests, and we as farmers and gardeners are so intimately dependent on the health of our native watersheds, and without the native plants to sustain them, we're truly in a crisis. So we're facing this rapid ohia death, and there is a great website for people who want more information.
Yes, that's rapidohiadeath.org.
Let's hope that's a website that is put in the history books before too long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the effects of the rapid dieback of ohia in these areas where it's occurred, based on your knowledge of the the what's the word for it? Basically, the intactness of the native forest. Are there invasive plants within that matrix that are ready to take over, or is it mostly native plants that would reestablish in those areas that are not BOPEA?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but in especially the original documented areas, especially in the lowlands of Pune, what we have already is our canopy, our top tall trees, as being nice native ohias, but what's happening is that the understories or the ground cover is being filled in with non-native species. So regardless of whether our native plants still live up in the canopy, is that as the older plants say aloha, they move on to the next world, they pass.
Even if they die
by natural causes, is that our seedlings below, or the stage of succession, if you're familiar with that concept, is that the next generation is that of a non-native species, which in certain cases can be really aggressive. So we were talking about water issues, and one of the very prominent invasive species on the Big Island, in these areas of native lowland ohia forests, as in many of our other areas that's that are dominated by a native forest but have invasive species coming in, is that of strawberry guava, or vi-vee. And the vi-vee, or strawberry guava, has been documented by various researchers in various climates here in Hawaii to be, I would say, a water hog, to be unofficial about it. So in one study up in Volcano Village on the Big Island, or the area around Volcano Village, so in the national park, they compared a big contiguous or cluster of ohia trees to that of a big cluster of vi-vee trees. And what they wound up finding is that when it rains really hard, the ohia lets the water come in, it drips down the trunks of the trees and goes right into the ground, which then replenishes our watershed. Mm-hmm. Conversely, the vi-vee tree, when the rain comes, it will bring in some of the rain, but what it does is it sucks up the water for its own use and doesn't give it back to our system. So it's kind of like that neighbor that moves in, and he's kind of really loud and, like, you know, leaves his television on all the time, and it's kind of not really a polite neighbor. So there is implication with this ohia dieback that we will be speeding up the process of faster water sucking neighbors to come in and dry up our watersheds.
Right. So in a way, though, it's only a matter of time, because as you said, the whole understory of the canopied ohia forest is already being overtaken by invasive
but
plants.
I don't want to be apocalyptic here, because
it's forcing us to look at the situation sooner than we might otherwise
absolutely
do.
And this is why it's very important that we all take a look at our natural resources around us, that we all come together and do stuff like reforestation projects. We work with entities, whether it's private entities like WIPA doing reforestation, or, you know, within your own community, or volunteering with the state or the feds,
or National Tropical
or National Tropical Botanical Gardens, that we really take a look at this. And it's really important that we foster a generation of Aloha Aina Army, those who want to take care of the land, because it's what's going to be our long-term security. Because, like I said, regardless of whether you're a tree hugger or you're a developer, we all need water, and we all need clean water.
Oh.
And
so let's pitch in, everybody.
We can all do it, you guys.
Yep.
So if you have a lot of money, donate to good causes. If you don't have any money, donate to good causes with your labor. But we all can do something. And this is not a advocacy for saying, oh, the world is doomed here. This is a way to say, hey, guys, we're getting into 2016 here. Let's arise as a nation, and let's just go on forward with, you know, aloha and malama aina, and just do what is pono and take care of our mama, Mama Earth, Malama your mama. So don't fear, you guys. Just be inspired to go at it and move forward.
Indeed. Yeah. And know that even if we're not a scientific researcher, we can discover things in our gardening and farming practices that can make a difference. We've mentioned that in regards to this issue and the possibilities that Korean natural farming could assist. And we want to let people know there's a very exciting opportunity coming up on the Big Island this coming month. A couple of training packages or trainings with IMO Korean Natural Farming Master, Master Cho and Son, two masters of the Korean natural farming method, will be brought here in association with the Hawaii Farmers Union United and CTAR options. Let's see, this is happening January 13, 14, and 15 for the first section, January 26 and 27 for the second section. There's a certificate training. There's a focus on advances in Korean natural farming. Maybe they'll talk about the possibilities of addressing the rapid ohia death as well. And for more information, I'm looking for where you can find that. You can call 202-643-7253. More details as well at the following website, cgnf/hawaii.org. And Eric and I were talking about the possibility that we may jump a plane and get over there. It would be
come join the party, you guys.
I'd love to be part of that training.
My family has 3 acres. Everyone can just come camp on there while we learn about Korean natural farming. I'm just putting it out there. Sorry, Mom, if we have a contingency of Kauai guys come represent, but we got to do what we got to do. Awesome. So apologizing in advance, but we do have a lot of bananas and stuff we could all eat. So
yeah. Sounds like a plan. So let's focus in on some more good news as well that you have to share with us, Eric, in terms of the enhancements coming to the Go Farm.
The Go Farm Hawaii program, yes. So I am the program coordinator here on Kauai Island for the statewide workforce development initiative to foster more farmers, which is known as Go Farm Hawaii. So hey, stop what you're doing, brah, and go farm.
Yeah.
So Go Farm, just for those who don't know already, is a program designed to give people the confidence and the skill set and the knowledge of the science and the business sides of production agriculture so that you, yes, you that's listening and you over there and the guy there in the car that's next to you is listening into your car, you could all become farmers. So right now here on Kauai, we have, a program that consists of doing tours with other farmers for about a month and a half, going to different locations, working with different types of farmers and different ecosystems that, so, you know, you have a general idea of, oh, wow, get plenty of ideas for how for farm. Then we do a 1 day a week, talk story classroom instruction where they do myself or another expert in the field of the science or business of agriculture gives knowledge to us about these aspects. Then 1 day a week, each person, we all get together on the farm. We all are given 1,000-square-foot area plot to develop a business plan for a business and a crop plan for a 3-month term of farming. Which is really great. So over a 6-month period, you get a really nice, robust skill set. Now, what the Go Farm Hawaii program has been doing on Oahu since its inception in 2012 is they have, for those who want to go continue on with the program, they have the option, those participants have the option of, for a year, having free land with free water, free materials, which could be anything from power tools to fertilizers to safety goggles, the ability to farm something between a quarter acre of land, which is a great way for those who want to go into large-scale commercial agriculture to have the experiences of developing and understanding the nuances of farming so that when they're either ready to work with a large landowner, go buy land themselves, they're really set up to do large-scale production. And that's one of the things that that we're really excited about, is that coming in fall 2016, we will be able to offer on Kauai Island the ability for people to have land for up to a year with free technical support, knowledge, equipment, all that kind, so that they become good farmers. So stay tuned, be aware. We'll share more about it in the coming months, that the Go Farm Hawaii program at Kauai Community College will be expanding to expand your agricultural dreams.
And that's a really great jump from the garden sort of scale to the farming scale,
mm-hmm.
and to have that practical knowledge, because that is one of the steps that's really been missing, is for people to be able to apply their skills that they've learned from the market garden setting now to something that's a larger scale,
right.
assisted perhaps by machinery or just the other practices you do when you have larger pieces of land.
Absolutely, and this is a great opportunity for those that are interested in maybe getting a little bit more of a robust skill set, so that when, let's say, something like the Kilauea Ag Park comes online, they can go take the opportunity to work that aina perfectly and succeed without flaws, because we want to see agricultural endeavors like this succeed, and we want to see everyone succeed. I mean, I don't like to see anyone fail. I like to see everyone go farm. I mean, just go farm already. Yeah. So it's a very exciting time, and the more that we keep this momentum going, the more we can spread this like peanut butter and jelly all over the island.
Well, that sounds messy but delicious.
I love it. That's good.
Thank you so much, Eric, for making these opportunities available and for expressing it with so much enthusiasm, because we need that excitement around agriculture. We want to thank, too, our occasional co-host, Tammy, who called in with a comment regarding the addressing the Rapidohia death problem on Big Island. Is folks need to identify and propagate beneficial fungi. We need to know more about which ones they are, and we need to all start propagating them more and seeing the effects of them, especially people on the Big Island.
Absolutely.
Where these problems are occurring. Oftentimes, the solution to a fungi problem is another fungi,
right.
and not, like you said, some sort of chemical that's going to have a very limited duration and possible negative effect on the environment too. So,
absolutely,
Tammy, we're looking forward to you bringing your knowledge forward for at least our Kauai audience, and of course Tammy, with years of experience teaching over on the Big Island, get on back there, girl, and show them how.
Yeah, you know, Tammy is a really great mycologist of sorts, and it's really phenomenal that, you know, people like Tammy are out there with her mana'o, and now the scientific researchers are out there saying, wow, people like Tammy, we need you. And that's what it is. It comes down to us as individuals, because this is a collective thing here as a community, as an island community, is that we all need to do our individual part and be you know, the person who thinks globally, or at least thinks globally about all our islands, and acts locally within our own aupua, within our own neighborhood, to be the change we want to see.
Yes, indeed. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. Stay tuned at 1 o'clock for Tracy with Kauai Vibrations until 3. She just stepped into the studio, so I know she's going to be bringing you a lot of great programming as she does. And we've got Shaka Kayaka from 3 to 5 with the Pupule Show, and lots of good stuff after that, Kauai Surf Stories. And just keep it tuned in here to kkcr.org is where you can go as well to hear a live stream of the show, as well as to make a donation to keep us on air. And before we go, we do have time to delve into a little bit more practical knowledge for our gardeners and farmers. We're going to focus in our investigations for the Secrets of the Soil Builders today on the concept of dynamic accumulators, sometimes referred to as nutrient scavengers, phytoaccumulators. We're basically talking about plants that free up nutrients from the soil, incorporate them into some portion of their body, whether it be the leaf, the flower, the fruit, and then cycling those nutrients, making them available to other plants. And so the concept is pretty familiar when it comes to nitrogen-fixing plants. That's a bit of a different thing where they're actually accessing atmospheric nitrogen to make it available to plants. So that would be one kind of phytoaccumulation. But then we're looking at other plants as well that would be taking minerals from the soil and turning them into a plant-available form, or perhaps that they'd be better at reaching into the soil or down into the soil to get capture these minerals for maybe our cash crop that isn't so good at doing that. So we have the possibility of doing cover cropping, crop rotation with some of these plants that are especially good at doing phytoaccumulation of good stuff and making it available to our next crop cycle. So, Eric, I did a bit of research here. Mm-hmm. I know you've done some. maybe I could lead off and tell you what I found. The idea of dynamic accumulators, let's just start with that, is a term that's often referred to in permaculture. But I would say that I was pretty surprised to read a very interesting article on permaculturenews.org by John Kitsteiner. And he basically showed that the concept of dynamic accumulators, as far as his exhaustive research as he described it, is shown to be largely speculative, not proven scientifically. Now, of course, we know that most of what goes on around us hasn't yet been proven scientifically, so it doesn't make it not true if science hasn't shown it.
Correct.
But to assert that it is something that's for sure going on when no research has been done to actually categorically show that leaves some opportunity for scientific research. And this is the kind of organic level research that's going on a lot more these days at the College of Tropical Agriculture here in Hawaii, which we're all happy to hear. Comfrey, often recognized as a dynamic accumulator, but surprisingly very little research such as that that kind of show that. Now, the idea of dynamic accumulation as a concept would be very similar, I would say, to the concept of a nutrient scavenger. And thanks to Eric's good works there over at KCC, he brings in some really good speakers to elucidate us about some of the in-depth techniques and strategies behind crop production. And we were lucky enough to get Dr. Kunhui Wang from CTAR, who has been a guest on our show before. She's a noted nematologist, but she also has extensively researched cover crops and the idea of them as both nutrient enhancers, nutrient cyclers in the system, as well as having allelopathic agents that would kill parasitic nematodes and serve to enhance soil fertility, essentially. So through her research, we have seen that there are certain cover crops that are really good at scavenging nutrients and then making them available for the next growth cycle.
Yeah, crops like that include dandelion, watercress, comfrey, kelp, and then of course we have our cover crops that maybe some of us are aware of, like sun hemp, buckwheat, Sudan grass. In a lot of instances when we look at dynamic accumulators, we're talking about plants that gather certain micronutrients and macronutrients or minerals literally from the soils and store them within their leaf mass. So, you know, we have a plant, like let's say Paul is a dynamic accumulator. We plant Paul in the ground and we can harvest Paul's leaves with all the goodness that's there. So in a lot of cases, these plants are they're scavenging for things that otherwise other plants wouldn't be able to have. So one of our unique problems that's here in Hawaii, and pretty much it's unique to us, is that regardless of how we've treated our soils historically, is that the nature of our geology results in that phosphorus, which is a very important nutrient for for root development, for setting fruit, for having delicious fruit, for making beautiful flowers, for starting plants from seedling, is very highly unavailable in our soil. So it's there. It's literally there. It's in the soil, but it's kind of like the woman you could never get because you just can't touch her. I don't know how else to explain it, but so there's other ways to explain it. So what winds up happening is in our geology is that we, because of our ages of soils and everything, is that we have a large amount of iron and aluminum in our soils, which is typically what we see in that reddish color. And the iron and aluminum, if you were to look at it underneath a microscope, literally makes these chemical connections or bonds that as like a chain block the phosphorus that's in our soil from being uptaken by plants.
And yet there are some plants that
accumulate this and scavenge this up. So if you are concerned about making your phosphorus become available, one of the really wonderful crops that you can grow as a cover crop to not only increase, you know, beneficial microbes and bring in nice beneficial pollinators is that of buckwheat. So buckwheat, which you can go to many different places and get that material. There is a place on Oahu known as Ko'olau Seeds. You can get that from, amongst many other distributors throughout the United States. But you can get buckwheat, plant it in your field, and buckwheat, through the magic of its oh goodness, it will mobilize the phosphorus. So it will allow the phosphorus to move from being blocked by the aluminum and iron bonds to make it available for the plants.
And that's a result of acids that are exuded from the roots.
Correct.
From what I understand from Kunhui Wang's research.
Right. So there are many different great dynamic accumulators that we can use. So I recommend that people just do as much research as possible. It's still an emerging field, as many things here are happening in Hawaii, but there is some great research being done by Dr. Kunhui Wang at the University of Hawaii at Manoa's CTAR facility. So you can just, for one thing, if someone has their curiosity going on, they can go research online. They can type in CTAR, CTAHR, cover crops. And from there, that's a great starting point. And especially because that is research directly related to what is going on here in Hawaii and applicable to Hawaii. But I want to encourage listeners to the box, think about other areas within the tropics and see what they're doing research there. Maybe there's, you know, the Department of Agriculture in India that has a whole department dedicated to dynamic accumulation. You never know.
With the Google Translate function, maybe we'll be able to read those reports if they're not in English.
You know, the nice thing about science is that it's inherently biased towards being written in English.
That is very lucky for us.
Yes.
Well, I took things a little bit, took your advice before the show, and I combined some research that we got from Dr. Kunhui Wang as well as some research from that I was guided to from that Permaculture News article. And I came up with a possible recommended dynamic accumulator cover crop mix.
Ooh.
And this is based on research not only from Dr. Wang, but also looking at which common plants that would be good to grow here in Hawaii that actually have the highest concentration in terms of parts per million in their various plant parts, and mostly within the leaves or the entire plant or the root. So here's a potentially extremely diverse, and we know we love diversity in plants.
Get your pencils and pens down for the recipe,
guys. Some combination of these: dill, lamb's quarter, oil radish, oats, and you want to use a particular rust-resistant oat, especially if you're on the north shore of Kauai. And we do have a couple of hybrid oats available, Texas A&M's Tamu number 5, as well as black oats are reported to be, although I've grown a black oat that was not rust resistant. So try that Tamu number 5 potentially in this grouping for oats. Chinese cabbage, buckwheat, as Eric said before, rye, sun hemp, white clover, and iron and clay cowpea. Now that's a lot of diversity in there, and it might be interesting to try one bed with this and one bed with that and see if you get a better result. So now, some of these cover crops are allelopathic. Not only do they kill nematodes, but they could actually inhibit the growth of other of the plants within this mix. Some of those would include sun hemp, Sudan grass, rye, and potentially the oats as well. So as far as those combinations, we might want to try some different test beds. But if we plant a diverse mix of these cover crops, we'll be cycling and making active so many different of the major and minor nutrients.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Paul, would you maybe suggest that if someone had a big field that maybe they do one strip of one crop, one strip of another, or we think that we want to maybe do a little experiment thing where there's a combination of all those individuals growing together, or do you think maybe it's also the timing of planting certain seedlings?
Indeed.
Because some
all
are going to grow.
Above.
So what you're proposing is that people should research the growth patterns of each individual species before mixing together and just kind of and feel it out. You know, it's kind of like a dating service.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, the speed at which these plants grow may overwhelm the other plants in terms of stature, in terms of growth habit, et cetera, or speed at which they grow.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, we're going to have to leave it there. We've got Tracy ready to go with Kauai
Yay,
vibrations.
Yay, Tracy.
Eric, I want to thank you so much for joining the show.
Mahalo, Paul. Mahalo.
Certainly, you're welcome back early and often, so I hope we see you in the studio again soon. We've got a lot more native plant talk to do and research into and just talking about educating and empowering our community to be growing food for our island and beyond. So thanks so much.
Aloha aina, you guys. Aloha aina.
Yeah. This is In the Garden on the Farm, and this is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL, Haleiwa, K224CQ Anahola. Stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. Shall I do it? You got one?
Oh, I thought you had some set
up there. I do.
All right, Paul, that was fun.
Yeah, man.
Great job, Eric. You want to sound good?